Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bikini the Brain. We are here with Ashley in our temporary studios now.
We're getting closer, guys. We are getting closer. We are now in the contest prep center. We just need to move to the room once it gets set up. Yeah. But closer.
We are closer. 10 feet away.
10 feet away. We're almost there, guys. Almost there. But it'll be way more epic than this, promise.
Yes, yes. So temporary studios, but hopefully you guys are getting a feel for it. Sounds a lot better as well. Mm-hmm. But today we have an interesting topic for you. This is actually a really good one. I'm happy that you came up with this. So you guys know Ashley does all the behind the scenes stuff on the podcast. She's like,
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, you do the technology stuff Anya does the technology stuff.
Yeah. And then Ashley comes up with the ideas weekly. She has like this bullet points and which one you want to do this week and do I need to study for one or whatever. So thank you, Ashley, for this. It's a good one. So what is the topic today? Our podcast manager.
Yes. So I think it's time to go back and kind of go over what a typical contest prep entails for bikini. And I think this is helpful not only for beginners, for rookies, but also even up to pros, because I don't know about you, but I'm always curious to see how other teams and other competitors train, in what way, what's their diet like, what kind of things are they doing in the gym, what are they doing for cardio. Yeah. So I think it's really kind of interesting, even from a pro's perspective, to see how other people are doing it. But yes, this is also a great one for those rookies out there, those beginners that, you know, I get messages from time to time. I'm sure you do also, like, where do I even begin? Where do we start? What's this all about? And I think this is going to be great for both the beginners and the pros to kind of see how we do things.
Yeah, for sure. So the one thing I really like, and one thing I'm really wanting to expand on this year too, is like having other coaches in the prep center too, and learn from them, like from different teams and whatnot. So I've already invited a few of them to come down. Some of the bigger guys are going to come down here and we're going to talk shop and get some ideas and pass some things around this year. So, so that'll be fun to see, like, just different perspectives and whatnot too. There's a lot of ways that we say, there's a lot of ways to skin a cat. It's funny because I get people that'll email me like crazy plans and they'll be like, can you believe this guy is doing this to this girl or whatever? And I'm like, well, like, is it working? Like, does it work? And is that what she wants? Does she care? Like, that's the thing, is a lot of things go into it, you know, because some clients will be like, I don't care what it takes. Just, you can crush me. I just want to win. Right. And so there's that mentality. And I try to avoid that as much as I can. But, you know, if someone's not responding at all, no matter what, and they've had previous preps that are really, really hard and they're like, I don't care. Like, okay, let's just get you there and we'll correct after. Just make sure that you pay attention after, right? So I get that all the time, like someone sending me other people's plans and I'm like, well, there's probably a reason for it. I doubt they do it to like every person that they run into, but then you do run into those coaches who do it to every person and I'm like, okay, that's just a bad coach. But there are scenarios where it's like, hey, this girl's not responding, she wants to do it, it doesn't matter, like just go for it for whatever, a month, you know, that type of thing. So let's go ahead and jump in for like a typical starting prep. So Ashley, you have a good both sides of things, because you've had to do the longer preps and you've had to do the shorter preps. So what's your perspective on that? And I think a lot of it comes down to your setup too.
Right. So now these days, you know, I prefer just to kind of maintain pretty much in the off season. I mean, of course, I'm going to fluctuate a little bit because I'm not stage lean all year round, of course. But if I can maintain and not go past, you know, a certain point, that is very beneficial for me. And I feel like for me personally, that works. But for most people out there, I would say a 12 to 16 week prep is pretty standard. Now, that can actually be longer, though, if you're just getting into the sport. And let's say you need to build muscle for a bit before you start like cutting and all that. So everyone's different. But for me, you know, I have the adequate amount of muscle. I don't really need to build so much. I mean, yes, in the shoulders a little bit, but nothing like super drastic. We're not doing like a whole transformation or anything like that. So for me, you know, I think we're going to start cutting around the 8 week mark, you said. Yeah. So that should be pretty soon, because I plan on competing in March. April.
It's moved. The shows this year are crazy. Yeah. Right now, until they start. So it's like 5 months So they started from the Olympia, right?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's 4 or 5 months. Yeah. So, yeah. So yeah, we got some extra time this year.
Right. But. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, so pretty soon I'll start to, you know, cut at the 8 week out mark. And, you know, I think everyone's different. You just kind of have to evaluate where your physique is at that point. But if you're just getting into it, just keep in mind, it's going to be a longer journey for you, perhaps, depending on maybe you came from a sports background like I did. I went right from track basically to competing. So I was able to do my first prep in like 12 weeks. But for some people, they need to build that muscle first.
Yeah. So one of the things is going to be your setup to basically to determine your time frame of from you to get like of how long your duration should be for a prep. It has to be based on your setup. So I'll have people that just like email me and they'll be like, how long does a typical prep take? And I'm like, well, it depends. Like, do you need to lose 100 pounds or do you need to lose 8? You know? So it's like, that's going to be like the determining factor. So one of the ways I like to look at it, like a prep, especially, you know, now that me and Ashley have been together for so long, like it's pretty easy to see like what's going on. But one of the things that we don't talk about too much is your setup going into prep. So right now, Ashley is setting up to go into prep. So right now her calories are up pretty decently high, like at 1600 or so almost, right? So she's having extra calories in the off season, but we're still staying very lean. Her cardio is reduced. So when that 8 week marker comes out, we're just gonna go for it, even though she probably needs 4 hard weeks to get ready. But I'd rather just be ahead and have a couple reloads within there.
Play it safe.
Yeah. And that's how she is too. She likes to play it safe and just be lean, just so she doesn't have stress about it. I think honestly, the stress could cause extra weeks of prep because people are like holding water and you're like, okay, I don't know if that's fat or water.
Right.
Or like,
and all the self-doubt too. Like, am I going to be ready? Am I going to be ready? Yeah. Oh my gosh, I gotta do something drastic because I'm not going to be ready. So I hate that feeling of being like, the only thing I can think about is, oh my gosh, got to get ready for this. Yeah. Got to get leaner.
So one of the things with the prep is I like to be my way of doing it, if I could, ideally would be every person be ready way ahead of schedule, like way ahead of schedule. And that way there's no stress. We don't have to go through crazy peak weeks, you know, but we'll go into the peak weeks in later on. But the setup is huge. So how you do your off season determines how your in season is going to go. If you have to transform every time you go into a show, you're probably not going to excel very far in the sport. I mean, that's just the reality of things because you have like, look at the top 10, right? Those, you never see any of them in the top 10 blowing up in the off season. If they do, it's a little bit, it's not like crazy. Like I don't think I've seen any of them like out of shape, you know? I mean, I've seen them a little softer. Of course they all get a little softer, 10, maybe 12 pounds, but that's it. You know? And then you see, you'll see even a petite bikini competitor in the off season, 15 pounds, 20 pounds up. And I'm like, you're on stage at 110. Why are you 20 pounds up? Mm-hmm. That's at 110, 10% of your weight is 11 pounds. So 22 pounds is 20% of your weight. There's no reason you should be 20% above your stage weight, like, and then prepping and to lose 20% of your body weight every single time you prep. And so that's going to be a big part of determining of like how long your prep is. Are you doing this for real and you're trying to go as far as you can? Well, then that means you're going to need to do a better job in the off season. Now, okay. So now we go into prep. How long should you take? So realistically, prep wise, and this is going to sound crazy because a lot of you watch, you know, the Beyonce diet and whatnot and whoever, but realistically a bikini competitor, Ashley's size, who's on stage around 120, losing 1 to 1.5 pounds a week is about the target. You don't really want to go past that. Because then you're going to start tapping into more lean mass. The more aggressive you go, the more likely it is you're going to lose lean mass, you know, for periods. So now if you did it for a week, well, you won't lose that much lean mass. If you do it for 16 weeks real aggressively, yeah, you're probably going to lose more lean mass than someone who dieted just for 10 weeks with more calories. So just for you science guys out there, yes, I know. 1 week hard, you won't lose much. 2 weeks hard, you won't lose much. 16 weeks hard, different, right? So. Mm-hmm. So take that into account. If you're one of those people that are like, oh, I need to do prep, I need to lose 20 pounds. Well, just understand that you're going to be sacrificing more lean mass than someone like Ashley in 8 weeks, who's going to lose 10 pounds. There's just no way around it. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I will say too. So look at your target of being, okay, what should my stage weight be? And how many weeks do I need at an average of 1.25 pounds a week? That would be a good marker. And then another good marker is losing 1/4 inch a week 3 out of the 4 weeks a month. Ideally it'd be 4 weeks a month, but if you're trying to like time it, I would say plan for a quarter of an inch 3 times a month, because it's unlikely you're just going to have a very, very smooth linear path to the show. So if in that case, let's say Ashley's waist is 22 on stage. Well, if she's 24 right now, if we had a perfect 8 weeks, then it would be a quarter of an inch down every week. And then she'd be 22 inches on stage day. The reality is it's a little different with Ashley, because that last week we tightened up quite a bit on the waistline. We'll lose sometimes like 3/4 or half an inch just because of cleaning up the foods, you know? So, but just take as a rule of how long do I need? Those are some good rules. They are definitely not set in stone though, but that's just kind of how I like to look at things.
So to summarize, somebody that, let's say they did unfortunately go 20 pounds over, and they're like wondering when I should start for the show or whatnot. Maybe a good rule of thumb would be start anywhere from 20 to 30 weeks out if they have 20 pounds to lose, for example. Do you think that's a good rule of thumb?
I would say, so I would go off of percentage of their weight. So just to throw that out there, just to, as like a more advanced way of doing it. So the easy way of doing it, I'd say just go for a pound a week. So 20 weeks would be the easy way of doing it. But you also got to take into account, okay, is this if it's bikini, I would say, yeah. Mm-hmm. But if it's like, let's say it's wellness and this girl's 155 pounds on stage. Well, her losing 1.5 pounds is a lot more likely than a bikini competitor who weighs 110 on stage. So that's the only difference. So I'll say, it's pretty realistic for most people to lose 1% of their weight per week if they're being even semi-aggressive. Mm-hmm. So a 120 pounder losing 1.2 pounds.
Right.
That's pretty realistic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I would mark it off of 1% of their weight per week to goal. So that would be, but you're playing with, you have to have every week perfect. If you're like, okay, I need to lose 20 pounds. Just to make numbers easy, I'm 20 pounds, I'm 200 pounds on stage. So that would be 2 pounds a week. You're really playing with fire because you have to have perfect weeks. And that's when people start grinding out towards the end. So I would say, be ready ahead of time. I'm always constantly saying that be ready ahead. Don't go too crazy in the off season. If you see the trend, guys, that's the newer method, the way that most top pros are doing it. I actually don't even know any top pros that are not doing it that way now. I don't know anyone gaining.
It was a thing of the past. Yeah. Like when I was first starting out and stuff, it was very common for girls to get really soft in the off season. Like to the point where it's like, you can't even tell. And I was one of those girls too. It was like a trend, I guess. Yeah. I mean, before we, got people like you, Adam, to save the day, but it was kind of like acceptable to kind of blow up in the off season to the point where it doesn't even look like you worked out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's sad. You know, you got to look at it like this too, regardless of what your physique goals are and how you're going to go about them. It's like, you don't want to abuse your body like that. It's like, I worked so hard for this body. I appreciate my body so much. It does so much for me. Like, I don't want to like abuse it like that. Just like fluctuating all the time. It's not good. And it's hard on your body to keep losing that weight and losing that weight. And it gets harder over time. So it's like, just even that mentality that I have now is like, I want to treat my body right, because it's done wonders for me. So I always keep that in mind too.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the least healthy route. And honestly, I always say that to girls too. Like, if you're doing this for, there's two different, types. There's people who only are doing it for the sport, right? Who's like, hey, I want to compete. I want to get as far as I can. And if that's your goal and you only need to look good one time a year at the Olympia stage, like there's some justification of not being 100% until that day. I get that. But still doesn't mean you can't be better if you just stayed lean the whole time. The other girl, which is 99% of the people out there, is they're just really big fitness enthusiasts trying to push it as hard as they can and see what they can do with the sport. And it's not like if they go pro, great, but it's not like the end of the world if they don't. They just want to compete and have fun and push themselves. That's like most of my clients, actually. I would say that's probably 99% of my clients too. And so the thing is, that girl, she deserves to look good all year. That's what she really wants too. But then sometimes they shift their mindset and they're like, no, I only need to look good on stage. And I'm like, well, think about that for a second. You're competing in amateur level competitions. You don't even really care that much about being pro. Why are you not going to look good all year? This is something you love. Don't turn it into a job. do, you know, it needs to be something you love to keep that passion going. You should be able to rock a bikini at the pool anytime someone asks. You know, you shouldn't ever feel like not comfortable in your skin because you're purposely gaining weight and not off seasoning the right way. So anyway, that goes into setup, duration, all that. So typically 12 to 16 weeks is the normal prep. If we can get control of your off season, you can have preps that are going to be, hopefully every prep for Ashley this year is going to be like 8 to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. If we can stay lean enough. And the thing is with Ashley, what we're trying this year is, well, last year was crazy because she basically dieted for like 60 weeks. I mean, it was crazy because they kept pushing shows yeah. And she'd be like dieting. And then she'd be like, all right, well, I guess I'm getting ready for this show now. So we kept like just prepping the entire year. So because of that, like towards the end of the year, things got a little harder. So that's why we're kind of trying to set up and get her ramped up metabolically now and just kind of ramp her up a little bit. And then that's what we're going to try to do in between each show is kind of ramp up, hopefully cut into it, set up, cut into it, and hopefully have smooth preps the whole year. But we definitely can't be running into grind preps like we did last year, because then it's unpredictable too. And you didn't look your best that you could have as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that's the reasoning for that. Now, as far as diet goes, Ashley, that's yes. The next one.
Yeah, the diet, man. You'll find that throughout a prep, it should be changing. You know what I mean? If you have a good coach, it should be changing. You're not going to have the same thing for 12 to 16 weeks straight. That shouldn't be the case. What should happen is, you know, you're put on a diet. And then after the week, you kind of check in, evaluate yourself, evaluate with your coach, and go from there. And, you know, whether you're going up in weight or down, or your measurements are going up and down, you can adjust accordingly. But I mean, I will say that as far as diet is concerned, you know, I think this is a little bit off topic, but a lot of people kind of fear the diet or dread the diet. And maybe it's because they're not eating the foods that they like, but I honestly like my diet. I have not gotten tired of it. And I think that has a lot to do with like the variety in my diet and also the way I cook things and season and use condiments. I mean, with me being like not even technically cutting yet, and even all the way up until I want to say like the last few weeks, I'm not really that obsessed with like 5 calories that might be in mustard or hot sauce. I know some people get really obsessive over that kind of stuff and salt and all that. But I think for me, you know, even those few extra calories that might be in condiments, that kind of like keeps me sane and makes me like kind of tricks me thinking like I'm having something different. Like, yes, it's chicken and vegetables, but I seasoned it and cooked it totally different, used different condiments. It's a new meal to me. So I think that's like one of the keys why I'm able to kind of, you know, be okay with having to diet for so long and not go crazy and still enjoy it. It makes it very enjoyable for me.
I think that that's a big thing too. So a couple things within that. One, have fun with your seasonings. Like that's huge. There's very, very low, or most of the time, no calories in seasoning. So go to one of the spice stores. We go to this one called Penzi Spices, and there's a bunch of like little independent spice stores you can go to and just like go in, have a sniff, make a day of it. Yeah, that's really cool. You go in there and you like open the jars and sniff it. Or these days you probably can't even do that, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, how dare you sniff that? Filled it up with COVID. So, but you go in and have fun and mix it up and have fun with, but yeah, the little things, they don't matter that much, especially when you're farther out. Now, if you're going crazy with like ketchup and things like that, then yeah, obviously that adds up. But you know, a dash of hot sauce, a this or that, you know, it's fine. So don't go too crazy with it. If your stage conditioning is being ruined by 10 calories, then you had bigger problems than your mustard that you added.
Yeah.
it wasn't the mustard, you know? Yeah. So I don't think there'd ever been a time where that would have been the case. So, but as far as the diet goes, yes, it should be changing on a pretty much like pretty weekly basis. Like it's funny because I will get, you know, I always try to give coaches the benefit of the doubt, but I will get some that are consistently bad. And I'm like, this is crazy. You know, I'll get like a diet sent to me. I'm like, this is crazy. And it's every one of their people. And like, I've had a few where they get their diet and it's the same diet for like 12-week period, 8-week period.
Yikes.
Never changes. And then every week the email is the same email. Are you seeing daily changes? Are you seeing daily changes? It's like, that's part of it. And then it says, okay, this week, let's ramp up your cardio another 10 minutes. And like all they do is they just raise cardio. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, that's the easiest way to prep someone. And like, and then the last 4 weeks to 8 weeks, I just crash them like super hard every prep. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, that is lazy, you know, right. is what it is. Like if your coach should be taking like a micro progression system where we're doing the least amount of changes necessary to create a stimulus to get you to the next stage. Mm-hmm. So the problem is a lot of coaches. So what I like to do is like, okay, here's where they are. They're, you know, a couple feet away. Then we ramp it up, raise up calories, cardio, whatever, ramp it up and keep doing this like micro progression where we're creating mm-hmm. a stimulus somehow. So it's like create a stimulus through exercise. Maybe they need a reload at that stage. Maybe their metabolism is crashing, so we need to take a week away. So like there should be a methodical thing going through the prep that your coach has no idea what's going to happen the following week. That's the thing is like when you're prepping, your coach shouldn't have a diet already ready for you like the next week, because we don't know what's going to happen. You know, nothing's ever linear. I wish it was linear. I would just be so easy. I would get, 16 week prep and just get it all ready and just send it out to him. See you in 16 weeks. That'd be great. But I see coaches doing that. It's crazy. I see coaches doing the first one where they give them one diet consistently for like 8 weeks, 12 weeks. And then the last 4 weeks to 8 weeks, they'll just crash them based on what type of shape they're in. And you know, at the end they look pretty good, but then they always rebound. They're always, their cardio settings are super, super high. They're doing 2 hours towards the end. So mm-hmm. my goal is to have someone do the least amount of cardio with the most amount of calories. And then as I keep working with them for longer and longer periods, I'm able to get their calories to be higher and their cardio to be lower, because we're going into each prep more progressed and more progressed and more progressed. But a lot of times people just ignore that part of it. And they're just like, let's just crash them, get them ready. And then talk to them when they do a show again. And then what happens is those people blow up in the off season. So your coach should have you be doing a weekly check-in. And then, I mean, I've seen coaches even do like bi-weekly check-ins, but like, you're not going to change in 3 days that much. Like, it doesn't really matter. Like peak week, yes, but not the rest of the time. I mean, it's mm-hmm. kind of crazy. So, you know, no one wants to be taking pictures and measurements and this and that 3 times a week, like every morning. That's a lot. So, like on a weekly basis is fine. So at that week, your coach will look at your progress the following week, or look at the progress that you made during that week based on those numbers. So based on the diet, the cardio, the reps, the supplements, all that. And then we can make a calculated adjustment to what to do the next week. If you hit the targets that we had for that week, then no changes are needed. If you didn't hit the targets that week, well, okay, what do we need to change? What's the minimal thing we can change to elicit the most amount of results for the following week, so we don't crash you into the show and leave you with the highest amount of calories and the lowest amount of cardio in the end result, you being the best, right? So that's what the coach should be doing. That's their expertise and experience goes into, okay, when do I create that stimulus? When do I reload the person and get them ramped up metabolically? What's going on? Like, what are the trends? You know, you should be able to see them if you've been doing this long enough. But sometimes I just see these, I'll see a coach and they send you a diet and it'll be like 1, 2, 3 or ABC, and like on an Excel sheet. And it's crazy. And they're like, okay, do diet number A this week. Next week, do diet number B. Okay, next week, when they check in, okay, do diet C. And I'm like, that's the easiest, like, lazy check-in. Like, how would you know 10 weeks ago that they should be doing diet C? Mm-hmm. There's no way. Like, I have an idea of what Ashley's going to be doing towards the end of the show. But if something happens like that one, like the Tahoe show, we're eating into the show. Like, how could I prepare that? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's just no way. I need to see what's happening every week, right? We need to see it. So like, just look at those things, but your diet should be progressed based on your progress based on how you're progressing within the week. You know, how much did you change that week? Okay, that's where the diet needs to be. How much you change in the next week? Okay, that's what the diet needs to be. So it's like, that's the biggest part, the biggest, biggest part. So the next part would be the training and cardio, of course. Mm-hmm. And I'm big on the training part of it. So you want to go into your thoughts?
Yeah. So like for training and cardio, weight training and cardio, just like the diet, probably is going to be changing throughout, especially with the cardio. Like let's say you're just beginning prep 16 weeks out, you really shouldn't be doing the same amount of cardio you would be doing, like, let's say a month out. I mean, this all also depends on where your physique is at the time, but you know, your body can definitely get used to that cardio. You can become adapted to it, which then makes it really, really difficult to use that as a stimulus when you get closer to a show, because it's like, I think we always kind of use this analogy. Like, let's say you have a marathon runner. You always say, like, if you have a runner, it's really hard to stimulate them with cardio when they're so used to cardio already. They're already running, like, you know, miles upon miles every day because they like it, because it's fun for them. And then to try to add on to more than that, it's just is usually doesn't work quite that well. So, you know, you always gonna kind of mix up the cardio, whether that be the duration, the type of cardio, the frequency, it should be changing just like your body changes. And sometimes you might need to cut back on cardio. Like I've done that before too, where I was getting too lean and I was still a few weeks out from a show or whatever. Then you kind of have to adjust it and just have that expert eye like you do. You know, you say, oh, we're getting too lean, or you're not lean enough, up the cardio, decrease the cardio, try a different type of cardio. And I think we're all different in what cardio is best for us. You know, what our goals are. If you have a girl that has really thick legs, really muscular legs, and maybe you need to decrease the size, you might suggest for them to just run flat surface, or quite the opposite. If somebody needs to build legs, maybe you'll prescribe them maybe a HIIT step mill cardio regimen. It all depends, but it shouldn't be like an automatic thing. You should have some variety between the athletes of what works best for them. And same thing for training, of course, because we all have different body parts that need help. We all have body parts that were already like, okay, this is already pretty much developed and where it should be. We should back off of that. So, you know, it's like a case by case basis. And I think, you know, we get those messages like, what training program works best for me? And it's like, you don't even know anything about them, or what diet works best for me. Yeah. It's like, you don't know anything about them. How do you just answer that? It's such a complicated question, but in short, it definitely varies from person to person, and no body is the same. So no workout program or diet should be the same either.
No, for sure. You pretty much nailed that, Ashley. That was really good. Yeah. You got the frequency. So the FIT principle, which you talked about is called FIT, frequency, intensity, time, and type. So it's two T's on it. So that's the variables that you change within the cardio. But what she was basically saying is that, you know, if you get a marathon runner and they're doing, let's say they're training, they're doing 3 hours a day of running. And then you're like, okay, I want to do a show. I'm like, okay, well, if I have you do my normal cardio, which is 20 minutes, right? Maybe the first phase of training, what is that going to do for you? It's not going to do anything for you because you're used to doing 180 minutes. So 20 minutes is nothing. You know, it's like taking a giant power lifter and you're like, okay, go curl those 10s for me. He's like, all right, it's not going to do anything for that guy. It doesn't do anything at all. So, you know, so if you get like a first grader, you give him some 10s to curl. Well, that's going to be a big stimulus for that first grader. He's going to be like, man, this is really heavy, right? And he's going to have to elicit some result because of that stimulus. But, you know, if you get Thor to do 10 pounders, he's going to be like, that's not even the hamburgers that I eat to maintain this weight, 10 pounds. So it's like, it doesn't even make, you know, so that's kind of like the, how you want to look at things, you know, creating stimuluses and microprogressions. So one of the things that I'm big on is heavy volume training going into shows. So I'm big on volume. I'm big on volume because it does a couple of things. One, we're trying to create something that's not supposed to be there, right? We're not supposed to have someone be really, really muscular and really, really lean at the same time. It's a very susceptible way for your body to really, for your body to die. That's the way your body thinks about it. It's like, okay, I am not set up to survive right now because I am burning way more calories than I should be burning because I have all this extra muscle taking in all this extra oxygen and nutrients. And then I have no energy reserves. So that's not how the body is designed. The body's not designed to be muscular and lean because purely for survival reasons. So it's going to fight you. The leaner you get and the more muscular you get, it's going to fight you because it's just all the body is trying to do. It's just an organism trying to survive the next day. That's all it cares about is just living, right? So there's hormones, there's things in your subconscious that are going to happen, which you think are like based on your mood that are not. They're based on your body trying to survive, you being in this highly susceptible, non-survival way. I mean, you're as close, when you get to stage, you're basically as close to like, based on energy in, you're close to dying as you basically are ever going to be.
You're because scaring people, Adam.
Well, it's the truth of it, right? Because you have very low energy reserves and you have very high energy output, right? So your cardio is crazy. Your muscle is you have as much as you can. Your fat stores are super low. So like, yeah, you're risky there, right? That's what your body thinks. But you're highly efficient and you're super healthy, cardiovascularly, all that stuff. But your body's like, okay, just get this guy to survive and store some energy, right? So it's going to be harder. That being said, I don't know, that's a gross way of thinking about it, but that's the reality of things, is that's how what's going through your body. And that's why your NEAT goes down. And that's why your body's telling you, don't fidget anymore. Like little things, you're just not burning calories because your body's like, reserve energy. So that's where NEAT goes down, right? And so like, if you used to like fidget with your hands all the time, that stops. If you wanted to get up to go to the bathroom, maybe you don't get up anymore. You're just like, oh, I'll just hold on.
I'll just pee my pants.
I'll just wait. I don't need to go that. That's when you're like, I don't need to go that bad. I'm okay. I don't need to go right now. Like, but before you would just get up anytime you thought about peeing, right? It's called, that's NEAT. I know it's crazy, but that's the reality of things, right? So the body is trying to survive. The whole point of that is the body is trying to preserve energy. It's going to do so by many, many different things. So just understand that your body is not supposed to be this muscular and this lean at the same time. So that's where I am heavy in volume training. I like doing high volume because that helps us keep muscle, right? The more we're training, the heavier loads, the high volume stuff, it's going to be easier for your body to keep muscle because now the body's like, okay, I'm very susceptible at this point because I don't have the energy in like I usually do. I have high energy out, but this person keeps demanding me to have this much muscle. They keep demanding it and I don't have the energy to preserve this, but I guess I got to keep this muscle because this person keeps lifting all these loads and I need to be able to do that because apparently we're doing something that requires us lifting heavy loads. I don't know what that is, right? The body's it doesn't know what you're doing. It's like, apparently if we don't lift these loads, we're probably gonna get crushed by some rocks that keep falling on us or something, right? So like, that's the reason we do this high volume training, is to keep the muscle because your body is fighting you at this point. And I know I'm kind of breaking this down in a different way today. And so I think I'm kidding Ashley. So while I'm breaking it down today, but I'm trying to break it down as simple as possible and like how we're not supposed to be this way. It's counterintuitive to our complete design. So that's why I really like the high volume training, where you can keep the muscle, you can burn more calories. If you're doing your training right, each set is basically like a mini hit set, right? It's not like a full hit set, but it's like a mini hit set. You're going to have some afterburn, or what they call the EPOC, where it's like, I'm not going to go into it, but it's basically how much oxygen you consume after you work out that helps you burn a little bit more calories. So doing more volume, you're burning more calories. As long as you're not getting to the point where you're doing too much and you're in the gym for 2 hours a day training with weights, where you're maybe at that point, you're actually being counterproductive to what you wanted to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the training stuff. High volume, I like it. That's ideal for prep, ideal for keeping muscle, ideal for burning calories when your body is trying to adapt. A lot of different factors. It helps with growth hormone release. A lot of different things are gonna really, really help with that high volume training. So unfortunately, some girls can't do high volume training because they're too muscular. Mm. That's where things become a problem. And then that's where you're going to go based on like cardio. That's where that person gets cardioed up, you know? So yeah, now we go into, I guess, cardio, right?
Oh yeah. Cardio is my favorite. Actually, I really do kind of like cardio ever since I found Orange Theory. Yeah. I really like cardio.
Yeah.
Because we do more than just cardio. It's like fun cardio, but it's good. It's good cardio, though.
I do. I think it's a good way of doing it, you know, and I think that the only thing that we have to watch with you is just your abs.
Oh, yes.
With cardio on the Orange Theory. But there's no reason you can't do fun things like that. I have a couple other people that are doing that too. Mm-hmm. And they're doing like, and it's kind of, I've come up with a way where it makes sense to create like a, the only thing I don't like about Orange Theory is that it doesn't give us a progressive model, right?
Yeah,
because
that's
every
true.
Class is 50
I
minutes,
I guess you
right?
could just, frequency, I guess.
Yeah, it's frequency model. So we're using frequency instead of time, right? So mm-hmm. I have a client right now who's doing that with her husband, and she's doing Orange Theory. And I'm like, okay, let's start you doing 2 Orange Theories a week because she wants to do that. And then I think right now she's doing 1 steady state session and 2 Orange Theory sessions, or 1 hit. I got to look it up. It's like 1 hit session and 2 Orange Theory sessions. And then we'll do like 2 hit sessions and 2 Orange Theory sessions, and then 3 hit sessions and 2 Orange Theory sessions. And then we'll switch it, 3 Orange Theory sessions and 2 hit sessions. And then, you know, that type of thing. So that's the only way to have that like progressive model within it. So there is a way to do it. Probably not the most ideal, but it's what you got to remember. There's another thing that cardio is based on. So we talked about frequency, we talk about time, and frequency, intensity, time, and type. So you have your intensity, you have your type. Years ago, I want to say back in 2002, they added an E to the FIT principle. So FITTE, and the E was enjoyment, right? And they're saying, hey, if people don't enjoy it, they're not going to do it. And so that was like a big factor in actually getting results, was the enjoyment, right? So Orange Theory enjoyment is like 10 out of 10, right? So how do you argue with that? Okay, well, now also the intensity of Orange Theory is pretty high up there. I would say it's like 8 out of 10.
Oh yeah, it's as intense as you want to make it though. You know, you'll have people in that class that are like kind of beginners, and you know, maybe they're kind of reluctant to push themselves. But then again, you know, when you're doing things at your own pace, when you're doing it at your own pace, you can control your heart rate. Like, how far do you want to push it? You know, so.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. And, you know, you could be Queen Splat or King Splat. We actually have a new King Splat. CJ Horn is King Splat. Ashley is Queen Splat right now.
King Splat.
What was your splats?
I got like, oh gosh, it was close to 50. I want to say 49 one time.
Yeah. So no, to be a King or Queen Splat, you got to break 48. Okay. I think 50 is like Emperor.
Emperor Splat.
King's. So a splat is, in Orange Theory, a splat is being in, so explain the splat.
It's being 1 minute in either the orange or red zones, which you have to hit a certain heart rate to get to. Now that I can't remember what heart rate you need to get to the orange or the red. And it might be different for women and men. I'm not sure.
It's probably 85% of your carbonin, I bet.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I guess that's the fat, high fat burning zone or something. I'm not sure.
It's probably a carbonin thing, but like, yeah, to be, that's crazy. Cause when I was in there, I think I was in the high teens in splat, and I was like, for me, I was pushing myself, but I was like, I was only went there a few times. And then, but you know, CJ went in there, he got 47 splats his first day. He's going to break 50. I told him, I was like, if you could get to 50, that's like unheard of, right? He's like, wrote me back. He's like, done. So he's doing it this weekend.
Okay.
Guys, intense. Him and his wife are crazy intense.
It.
They're super, super cool to work with. But I don't doubt he's going to do it, but I don't know. That's it. I don't know how you can do that. I don't know how you can physically.
You're going to be out of breath the whole class.
I don't know how you can physically do that. The whole 50, it's 50 minutes, right?
It's, it's anywhere like from 52 to 55 minutes, because they have a few minutes afterwards to stretch. So yeah, basically you got to get your heart rate up right away. And the difficult thing is too, is since it's a class that they kind of tell you what to do, although you can go at your own pace, there are some like stations it's going to get hard to increase the heart rate. Like if you're doing like bicep curl, tricep curls with the weights, it might be difficult to get that heart rate up. So sometimes it's a little bit out of your control, but sometimes if it's like a plyo heavy class where you're doing tons of plyos in between those lifts, you can probably keep it up longer. It depends on the day. So, I mean, good for him though.
Yeah. We'll see if he becomes Emperor Splat.
Holy splat.
So that's a fun way of doing it. Obviously Ashley likes doing it. I have a few people who like doing it because they just hate cardio. Ashley doesn't hate cardio, but if people just hate cardio, that's a good way of doing it. Also, I have some people who run 5Ks. They'll do 5Ks.
I used to do that, and then the freaking pandemic. And then I found Orange Theory. But if they have more of these 10Ks here, when they start having them, I'll be in those too. I like that.
It's a fun way. So good ways of doing like having fun cardio, you know?
It's also great because it's like accountability too. It's like you signed up for it, right? You signed up for the Orange Theory. You signed up for the 10K. All right, your name's on the list.
Yeah.
You committed. You got to be there. You got to do it. So that's what I like about it too.
I have one client who does virtual 10Ks and stuff.
Oh, F that. That's
I don't know.
That's what rip-off those things are. You basically just say you did it and then get a medal for it or whatever.
You pay to be on a Zoom call.
I don't know how they technically work, but they feel like a rip-off to me.
Yeah. So I was trying to think of anything. Oh, another thing I'll do too for some clients is they'll do a hike like once a week, like during the nice weather time, especially like the Colorado people, they'll say, oh, I want to do a hike, whatever. So I'm like, okay, let's not do 5 cardio sessions this week. Let's do 3. And then you could do your 2-hour hike, right? That type of thing. So there's a lot of different ways of mixing it up and having fun with it. It doesn't need to suck, but I will say though, the best progressive model is going to be in the gym cardio. That's the best controllable progressive model, because I can say, okay, do 20 minutes this week. Next week, let's increase it 15% and do 23 minutes. And it's like, you know, something like that. You can't do that in those other models. So that's the one thing. If I have someone who's really, really hard to prep, I'll probably say, don't do the Orange Theory, because we need some type of progressive model to get you into that stage shape and know, like, the whole thing about like coaching is that you're, the whole thing that you pay for with coaching is what to do at the right time based on that coach's experience, right? So it's like, okay, is it time to reload this client? Is it time to fully back off this client? And you're paying for their eye, right? You're paying for, okay, what does she look like at 8 weeks out? What do I think is going to happen in this many weeks? What do we need to do now based on what I think is going to happen in that many weeks to elicit that result? So anyway, that's kind of like the whole thing, training, cardio, whatnot. So, but cardio doesn't need to suck, I guess, in the end of this.
Yeah, exactly. You got to find something you like. I mean, like you said, if it is like an issue where they're not leaning out and you want to be more in a controlled environment, of course, like doing the safest thing would be the gym cardio. That way you can control the speed, you know, like, okay, level 12, I've been doing this, like, let's ramp it up or let's go longer on the same level, whatever the case may be. But also, like, you know, having fun is a big part of it too. It keeps you interested and makes it not miserable. You can probably keep it up longer and kind of be in it for the long run. And I'm just, you know, like I said, I found my cardio right now that I'm having fun with. And, you know, it's great for me personally because I can, you know, look forward to it. And like I said, it holds me accountable. And I guess, like you mentioned, the disadvantages would be like, there are some things that are your control. Like, is it going to be an endurance day? Is it going to be a plyo day? You don't know. Also, when we have to do the abs, I have to like find an alternative exercise for abs because I don't do them. But yeah, it's just, you know, but for me, that's working for me right now. And if we see that, you know, there comes a time where my body's not reacting as well, or you want it to be more controlled, then I got to switch over to the elliptical or the treadmill or whatever it may be. Yeah. But for now, I'm happy with my Orange Theory.
Yeah. I'm hoping that when it gets closer to the show, that there's more 5K, 10Ks and stuff. Yeah. That's what I'm hoping for too. So yeah. So there you go with your cardio. So it doesn't need to suck. And then the next one is we go into the posing, right?
Posing is huge. Is very huge. You can have the best physique on stage, but if you don't know how to display it, it's kind of like for nothing, you know? And I think the important thing here is like, one, you should be posing basically when you start prepping. Just because you're 16 weeks out does not mean you can't start practicing. And the only thing is you won't see exactly how your lines will look when you're nice and lean and almost stage ready, but you can get comfortable with posing in general, like comfortable in heels and walking and turning, even things like that is going to be very beneficial. So start as soon as possible. You don't need to be contest lean to start posing. And I think that's a given. I think it's important to also stay up on the current posing. And, you know, I always suggest, like, if you're very new and you're really just unaware of everything that goes on in our sport and how it's judged, YouTube's a great source because you can see recent shows, how the girls are posing and what girls are winning and how they're posing and what poses look best on different body types. Because let's be honest here, just because a pose looks good on someone else doesn't mean it's going to look good on you. We're all built differently. There are poses that don't work for me. There are poses that do. So I stick with the ones that do. And I know there's going to be like a lot of people, maybe a lot of people try to tell you, oh, you should pose like this instead. Yeah. And draw little arrows and lines and send it to you. But the reality is that works for that person that you circled. That works for them, but not for me.
Yeah.
Believe me, I've tried every pose out there.
Yeah.
Believe me, trust and believe that when I don't even know how many shows I competed in, I test the posing. Yeah. Okay. We test it. But there's a reason why I choose the certain poses, the angles that I do. And it's because my body is my body and I know my body and it certain poses look good on this body, certain poses look good on that body. I don't try to do a pose that I know isn't going to be flattering for my physique.
Yeah. And real quick, I want to throw it out there. If you're an amateur competitor who's competed in like two shows and never won any, don't send Ashley arrows all over your pictures that you should be posing like this, because like it's the most annoying thing in the world. I get them, she gets them. Like, stop. You're okay. Like, if you're someone like you know, one of the big coaches, yeah, send them over to me. I would love to hear your opinion about that. Oh, open invitation to the top guys, Kim, Davian, Paul, James, all those guys. You want to shoot it to me? I would love to see it. I'd love to talk to you guys about it. I take that, Chris. You've done one show, placed third in some amateur level with 50, like with five girls in it, right? Yeah, I don't necessarily need to see that 7 days a week. She should post like, we know.
Like we've tried, like, yeah. Believe me, this isn't our first show.
I hate it.
This God. Isn't our first show. Oh my God. No, it's a joke, but it's like, you know, maybe they're coming from a good place. They want to help, but it's kind of like, you know, they see somebody like maybe Issa, right? For example, Issa. Yeah. Now, last year when she won, she kind of has a, how would you describe it? More of like a figure-ish front pose where she kind of cups in a way.
She opens up a lot.
Opens up a lot, and she has a nice shoulder cap. For me, when I try to do that, my arm looks like a flat noodle because I don't have that same structure as her. I don't have a wide clavicle. It just doesn't work like that, you know? So therefore I don't do that. But I think it's like funny because after she won, I would get those messages like, you need to pose like her, you need to pose like her. Yes, she did win that year. And yes, it looked amazing on her. And there are free girls that can really pull that off. I wish I could, I can't. So therefore I have to adjust slightly my front pose to where it looks best for my physique personally, because if I try to cup like a figure competitor and open up, you can even see through my jacket. That is not, that's not gonna work.
Yeah, mm-mm. Can't wait to start getting the Janet ones. Oh, you should pose like this.
Oh, yes. And yes, and I think it's like good to get a good idea to see how the top girls are posing.
Yeah.
There are some top girls that pose more like me, and then there's some girls that pose more like Issa. You know, it's kind of like a little variance between them all. But you know, every pose works differently. So don't necessarily go to the person that won a show and say, I've got to pose just like this because she is, you know, cause it might not look good for you. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but you got to try, you gotta really see what, you know, is best.
You got to individualize your posing. And that's why I say everyone should work with a posing coach for at least. Now we do two different things with the posing. We have our group posing classes. So we have group posing classes will be starting up here pretty soon again too. Every Saturday we have them. And they'll be starting probably starting in March here in Vegas. The good thing about group is you get to kind of go through like a mock show. Every time you're doing it with, you know, 10 girls, 15 girls, whatever, whoever shows up. And it's kind of like a show. Every weekend's like a show. So you're going through that experience. So that way when you're on stage again, come showtime, you're more experienced with being around all these different girls and you understand positioning a little bit better. You understand distance between girls better. You understand scenarios, like if a girl's stepping up on you on the line on accident or something, and you're in her shadow, like what to do and those types of scenarios. So that's why I really like group posing. I'm big on the group posing, but you got to understand there's only so much we can do during group posing for your individual pose, because it would take me 30 minutes to do your individual posing session. And we have 10 girls, 15 girls there. So it's very much just little tweaks. Like, hey, change this. And it's very helpful. And some girls use that for their entire posing, which is, it's okay. It's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes I do think it's better that everyone has a posing coach. And that's why I can always recommend one of our pro posing coaches. So we use obviously Anya Nicholson, and she does it online and in person. Ashley does in person, but she will be doing online pretty soon here, probably in like 2-3 weeks. It's just the internet connections always. So one of the things too, like if you're doing posing coaching with a posing coach and you're doing online sessions, I'm a big fan of it, of course. But make sure your internet connection is strong wherever you're doing it from, because it really messes up posing sessions quite a bit. Phoebe Hagen and then Frida Paulson for bikini, and also Samantha Jaring does bikini too. So that's kind of who we use for our posing. And if you're not on our team, you're still welcome to message any of them to set up a posing session. But you really should be doing individual posing sessions. Even if you're just starting off, like a 30-minute session, just starting is fine, just to get like understanding what you have to do, and then send your check-in pictures in your poses when you're at 16 weeks out or so. Even if you're not good at it, and then your coach every week will basically tell you, okay, you can in your mandatory poses, be like, hey, change this a little bit, talk to your posing coach, whatever. This is what I think is looks best. And then you kind of tweak it as you go through. So you should be getting multiple eyes on it. So one, you check in your pose, in your front and back pose, you check in that pose. Two, you have a posing coach online or in person. Three, you go to posing classes. I think if you do those three, you're going to be like super, super ready. And I think every area has their own like posing. You'll have your small posing classes or whatever too. And if not, you're doing it with your posing coach is fine too. You can, you'll get your, they'll tell you what the scenarios that are going to happen on stage, whatnot. But me personally, I like the hands-on feel. That's why I have a prep center, because I still like the hands-on feel. I like to take my pros in person and take them through a workout, see what they're actually doing. I like to see physically see what they're doing for their posing and whatnot, you know, and not mm-hmm. just like see them, you know? Yes. So that's why, and eventually, you know, that's where like, I'm going to have, I mean, that's why we're in Vegas really too, is just because everyone can come here. It's so easy, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the, I think that's the whole posing thing.
Yeah. And I think too, is like a few other tips I should mention as well, when you're practicing posing is, you know, even when you're not posing with a class or posing online, your iPhone's going to be your best friend sometimes, you know? I think if you use like your phone and just record yourself and see different slight pose variations, you can really pinpoint to see which one works best. And make sure to place the phone where a judge would be, because a judge isn't going to be eye level, right? It's going to be like down. They're going to be down looking up. And also, whenever you're doing any sort of practice posing, it's like be willing to try different things to see what works best, but also send maybe your coach or somebody that's very familiar with the sport what they think as well. Because I think like another set of eyes whenever you're doing things like this is always helpful, because, you know, somebody that has more experience than you might see something that you don't. And yeah, I think that's about it. Oh, and what was I going to say? One other thing. Be cautious of different federations if you're like researching posing and stuff like that, because different federations other than the IFBB and NPC will pose differently, and that can really kind of throw you off when you're doing your research, right? You'll see some girls like pose with their arms out from the back and do like a teacup thing. We don't really do that here in the NPC IFBB. So just make sure wherever you're getting your information from, it's from the federation that you align with and that you signed up for, because it's going to be different, and different countries also kind of pose different ways as well. Yeah. So that's just something to keep in mind when you're doing your research and all of that. And also I would have to mention as well, kind of goes along with the different posing for different body. You know, every person's going to have a different style as well. Some people will be more cutesy, more athletic, more bouncy, more sexy. And I can just tell you from my personal experience, you know, I'm definitely not like a sexy like poser. It just doesn't really fit my personality. It feels kind of weird. So I kind of do what I think works best for myself. And I'm by no means the best poser out there. I'm not claiming to be or anything like that. But for me, I kind of try to go more like the cutesy or bouncy or athletic route rather than like a sexy posing for me. I just can't pull off those facial expressions anyway, you know, like them. You know, I'd be cracking up on stage. So I mean, for me personally, that's what I do. And it's like, you know, you'll kind of, as you practice more and more, develop your own style and see where that kind of, what kind of style aligns with you, and just go with the flow and don't try to be somebody you're not, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And I think real quickly too, I'll go into, just because it kind of came up, the different federations real quick too. So I do a ton of NPC IFBB preps. That's obviously what I do. And then the reason that I focus on that is because that is the biggest organization. It's the best of the best. There's no one argues or debates at who the best is. Everyone who debates it, they say, okay, who's Miss Olympia? Who's Mr. Olympia? It's not who's Mr. Natural Olympia, where they try to bite off like the Olympia title and cause brand confusion. It's Mr. Olympia, Miss Olympia, who's Miss Bikini Olympia, who's Miss Figure Olympia, who's Mr. Men's Physique Olympia, right? That type of thing. That's the best in the world. There's no debating it. No one kind of, I mean, it's just the way it is. And the only route to get there is the NPC. So NPC IFBB. So it's the cream of the crop. Okay. There's just no, I mean, it's the masses. It's the cream of the crop. There's, you know, it's 80% of the market. It's, you know, it's the real deal. So if you're kind of debating on organizations, and you're wanting to be like, there's two ways of doing it. You know, if you want to be big fish in a small pond, there's a lot of smaller organizations. If you look at like, here's the thing I don't really love about the natural organizations, like the INBF, the WNBF, the OCB. The thing I don't like about them is they kind of have a, like this stigma that NPC is not natural, right? Just because NPC isn't tested doesn't mean it's not natural. It's not like they're promoting drug use, you know what I mean? And like, so like, you'll see these organizations like OCB, WNBF, INBF, and their athletes are always saying, oh, well, I don't do that because I don't do drugs. And I'm like, a lot of the girls don't do drugs. Like a huge amount of them don't, especially in bikini, you know, like a huge amount, like more, way more of my athletes are drug-free than that are using something. Right. So like, it's don't let that stigma kind of determine what organization you go to, because there's a lot of natural pros out there. People don't believe it because they just want to believe like the INBF, WNBF, like that mindset or whatever of like what goes on in the community of how they talk about it. But you got to understand, bikini is different. You know, it's not bodybuilding, you know? So that, don't let that be a deterrent. Let the competition level be your deterrent. Like, do you want to compete against the best of the best? Well, that's NPC, right? Do you want to have the most glamorous show, but you don't really care about the budget? Well, WBFF is really cool for that too. WBFF is like a lot of costumes, a lot of suits, but it's very expensive to do it. I will say that. Like, I've seen some of these girls spend $5,000 on their costumes, their wings, their jewels, or this, that. And that is a judged factor. So it's going to be, because it's a judged factor, the investment of that's going to be a part of it, you know. But I think that's cool if you want to have fun and do the glam part of it. Look at those physiques. They're a little bit different too. Like if you look at like the bikini diva division in like WBFF, it's a different show. It's called World Beauty Fashion Fitness, I think it is, or World Bodybuilding Fashion Fitness, mm-hmm. I think it is. So there is like a fashion element to it. The guys dress up in suits at night for their awards. The girls dress up in gowns and they're for their awards. So it's like a different, it's a totally different feel to it. So, you know, look at that. I don't have anything bad to say about WBFF. I just think it's expensive. I've prepped people for that. I've even had people prep in the top 10 of the worlds for that. But now 99% of my preps are all NPC IFBB. The only, you know, I did the other organizations you have that are, is like Muscle Mania organization. And they have, you know, they have all these different names for their organizations. Each name is very confusing. I still don't even understand it. Each division has its own like league name. So it's like not just Muscle Mania. Muscle Mania is just their bodybuilding. And then Bikini is like Bikini America, and Men's Physique is like Physique America. I don't know. Everyone has their own, they're different things. So it's not just like Men's Physique, but they have the same divisions. It's just, and that's another natural organization too. They have a big world event in Vegas, but their local shows are pretty small. And the same thing with and that's why I'm not a big fan of like the WNBF, INBF shows. And the Muscle Mania shows is because their shows in the area are always tiny, like always, always tiny. And so it's just not, the thing is, it's like, I've even had promoters from like the natural organizations, like, I think it was the WNBF. They called me up a day before the show. And they're like, hey, we need 5 bodybuilders to give out a pro card. Do you have anyone who's even in good shape? Because we have only 3 people who showed up and we want to give out a pro card. And I'm like, wait, you want me to, I'm like, I only have Men's Physique guys that are in shape. Like, we'll just have them do bodybuilding. And I'm like, wait, you want me to send one of my guys who's in decent shape right now to your show just so you can give out a pro card who's someone who's not deserving to beat someone who's not ready for a show? That just to qualify for the 5? That was weird, right? I forget what organization it was, but I'm like, you would never hear that in NPC IFBB. You don't have, you know, Jay Emanuel's not going to call me up and be like, hey, Adam, you have someone in shape so he got a pro card? He'd be like, if there's no one there, then they didn't deserve it. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it would go. Like, we're the raw, real deal. Like, you win and you're in. That's the scenario, right? Like, you're never going to run into that scenario. So it's just like, it's just different. The credibility is really, really high. The best of the best, the legends all come from NPC. You talk about legends, you know, you talk about, you know, Arnold, Ronnie, Jay, Phil, like legends, right? That's IFBB, Olympia. If you want to get to that legend status, that's the only way. So obviously that's where I'm big on. Mm-hmm. After that whole scenario, I had a couple scenarios with natural organizations that really turned me off to them. And it was, one is the size. You know, I go to the show and there's like 30 people in it. And we're talking 6 divisions with 30 people. Like, how competitive is that going to be?
Not a COVID year.
Yeah, that's not a COVID year. That's before COVID. And so I was like, oh, this kind of sucks. This girl prepped for 16 weeks and she's in her class with one person who looks like she didn't even prep for the show, right? And then I had like guys who would win an overall and then go to an NPC show. And I'm like, dude, you wouldn't win. You wouldn't even place top 5 in your class at an NPC show, you know, because it's just not as challenging for the most part. There are some guys that are pretty good, but for the most part, it's not as challenging. And then I had another one where I was prepping a girl for 16 weeks. We're at week 14. She's crushing it. She looks awesome. She was doing it. This was the INBF. And then they canceled the show two weeks out from the show before COVID, way before COVID. It was like 2-3 years ago, because there wasn't enough people registered for the show. And I'm like, dude, this girl's prepped. Like, if you're a promoter, take the hit. Like, that's your job by the athlete. Like, sorry if not enough people showed up where you can't make money, but that's that. You don't let someone prep for 14 weeks and crush themselves, and then you're going to lose a couple thousand dollars, so you cancel the show. Like, that doesn't happen in NPC either. You know what I mean? So, like, that's the only thing. So for me, like, with as experienced as I am and working with all these organizations for years, I pretty much just stick to NPC. Musclemania is cool too, but they're just really, really small. But the community in Musclemania is really good. I will say that. A good group of guys, and it's a very good and communal thing. But if you're talking, hey, I want to compete, I want to be my best, I want to really push it, I want to see how far I can get. And not just that, I want to actually compete against the best and not just like mostly transformation people, like that are in their first transformation. I would say NPC is the way to go.
And I would also add on to that, the NPC and IFBB has way more opportunities.
Way more.
As you'll see, way more opportunities than any other federation. So kind of like a no-brainer for me. But I also wanted to add on to this as well, because I do get this question from time to time, is like, where do I look at the schedule, or how do I even know where to sign up? Go to npcnewsonline.com. Obviously, that's for if you're an amateur, and if you're pro, you already know ifbbpro.com. But yeah, I just thought I'd add that into there as well.
Yeah, so there you go. That's my take on it. So, And that's just from my experience. If you're in one of those organizations that I don't prefer, sorry, that's just the truth of it from an experienced coach's perspective of prepping people for pretty much all organizations for 20 years. So that's kind of a reason I molded to this. So yeah, just through experiences. Now, I think the next one is going to be just going into like your expectations at a show and what to expect. And I think no one's gonna be better than to talk about that than you.
Yeah. I mean, I always have this, you know, I guess mindset, or I always tell people, especially the beginners out there, don't focus so much on a placement on your first show, on your first few shows, because more than likely, it's going to take a few shows for you to get the hang of it. And what do I mean by that? To nail your physique, your posing, your tan, your hair, your makeup, your suit, all that. It took me a few times to figure it out. Like, oh, you know, oh, this is how you do it. Okay, now, oh, this works for me. Okay. So it might take you a few times, but I think a lot of times, if you focus solely on that number placement, like let's say you are a newbie, you're a beginner, you've never competed before, and all you're thinking about is, yeah, I'm gonna win. I'm gonna get first place, yeah. And if you don't win, it's kind of like your heart drops, right? And you just get discouraged, you get disappointed. And that's where you might see people be like, this is rigged, this is political, I'm never doing this again.
It's the worst.
You know what I mean? And it's like a bad attitude to set up with. And of course, further down the line, if you wanna set your goal to win, for sure, okay. But let's figure this out first. Let's not have our expectations so high to where if you don't achieve that, you're going to just give up. We don't want that. But I think instead, just think, I'm going to give them all. I'm going to try my best. And I am going to be proud of my physique on that day. And no matter what, I'm going to like tell my grandkids, I got on stage one day, I looked amazing, and I looked better than 99.9999% of the population, and I did it, and I had fun. You know, I think it's going to take a few of those shows for you to kind of grasp what they're looking for and what you want out of this. But I don't think it's healthy to kind of take first or last. You know what I mean? If I don't get first, it's worthless. It's a waste of time. Don't think that way, because, you know, everybody on the Olympia stage has lost, you know, quite a few times, probably even in their amateur career. Most likely what happened was it took a few times, just like I said, for them to get the hang of it. Then they're getting momentum, and then they're winning, and then they win their pro card. That's usually how it works. And of course, there are a few cases out there where it's like, boom, an instant star. Of course there is. But more than likely, that's not the case. And I want people to enjoy the sport and see that there are so many great opportunities and so many great memories you can make of it. But don't ruin it by having this, you know, all or nothing mindset when it comes to a placing. And, you know, I think if you are well grounded and you kind of have realistic expectations going into your first few shows, it can be much more of a fun experience for you And I think it's better in the long run and you'll kind of enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah, I would second that too. Because I would say that like the first time I stepped on stage and when I got off, I was like, I just felt very accomplished.
Yes.
You know? Like it was like that feeling, like it's just the feeling of accomplishment is just, I mean, you can't really even describe it, like, because it's so hard and it takes so much out of you to get in that type of shape. So like, I think, and I still say it to everyone, like anyone who's even involved in a little bit of fitness should go and do a show, just one, to see what you're made of, you know, because it trains you for all aspects of your life. Because you, for 16 weeks or however long it is, you wake up with a goal in your mind and you wake up with it, you know, and any successful person wakes up every morning with a goal in their mind, whether it's Elon Musk and running 5 businesses, or it's you getting ready for your first show with that goal in mind. And it's just important to have that goal in your mind and then do everything it takes that day to achieve that goal. And then as soon as you do that, like for 16, 20 weeks, you find it very easy in the rest of your life to do that with other things in your life. So I think that because I started so young doing this so aggressively, you know, because I worked in a nutrition store since I was 16 years old, started training at 18, did my first show at 19, and was like, I think because I was always so set on this goal of being a bodybuilder and so set on like doing what it took to achieve that goal, that it kind of set me up very well for what I do now, which is try to be like the best coach I can be and build the team up as much as we can and create the community as much as we can. Cause almost to a fault where that's all I think about, but I wouldn't have it any other way at the same time, you know? So I think that that was a really good training for my mindset. Like, I don't know if that's what it came down to or whatnot, but I can't really think of any other reason why I wake up so obsessed with just being better every day. And I think that bodybuilding did that for me. So I'm really thankful to bodybuilding for that because it did so much for me. You know, bodybuilding got me off the streets. It gave me a place that was safe at, where I didn't have to deal with the stuff going on in my neighborhood. I was just in the gym like 3 hours a day. It taught me to be dedicated to this, like to everything in life that I want to achieve. And I think that everyone needs to go through it. It's such a huge, like, I can't say it enough. Like, even if you're just a little bit into fitness right now, like, and maybe you're trying to figure out what to do in like life in general, you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do with my career or whatever, like do a show. It's going to train your mind. It's going to train your mind to achieve a goal based on daily application of getting closer to that goal. Like it's so big for you. So, but as far as like any other thing in terms of like expectations, I would say don't have any as well. Just try to be the best you can be and see where you land.
Yes. Yeah. And I want to also add, train to win, but don't assume you're going to win. So yeah, don't be like, oh, I'm not going to win my first show anyway, so I'm just going to give it like, you know, 75%. No, train to win.
Yeah.
And then just don't assume you will. But hey, if you do win, that just exceeded the expectations, right? You're just like, whoa, I wasn't expecting all this. Wow, what a great surprise. So I think I just wanted to clarify that as well, because you always got to train to win.
Oh, no, you got to give it your best and everything. You know, you're never going to achieve even half of what you want to achieve if you don't give 100% of your effort. The inconvenience will be there. The suck will be there. The daily inconvenience where your family or your friend, your girlfriends are like, hey, I just want to go out to dinner today. I haven't seen you. You've been working out so much. That's going to be there. Like, you're going to have to overcome some shit to get through a prep, especially your first one, because no one in your circle is familiar with you in prep. They're familiar with you in your regular life, right? Where you can go and hang out and go eat pizza with them that weekend and just kind of mess around and have whatever. But when you're in prep, it's like, no, I'm hyper-focused. It's going to have its periods where it sucks. It's going to have its periods where you love it too. Like, I love, what I love about prep when I'm prepping, which hasn't been for a few years, is what I loved about it was like the daily scheduling of it, right? Like, it just kept me, okay, got to wake up, got to do this. Got to wake up, got to eat this, got to wake up, got to prep my food, got this. And like, just, it gave me like a routine, like a daily routine. And then I just got into that zone where it was just like, that was just life at that point. And it just kept me super focused in it. I just, you know, as I said, I apply it to all other aspects of life now. Now my prep is like this right now, you know, the building and all that. But I don't know. I love it so much. I love it. I think everyone should do it. But the mindset, this is where people get crushed in prep, is like a lot of times, especially in bikini division, you'll have a girl in the bikini division, you have a girl who's usually like, they're usually like already kind of fit, right? They're like, they've been doing fitness for a while already, and now they want to do a show, right? So they've been doing it. Maybe they're in shape their whole life, and now they want to do a show. maybe they were a cheerleader, a track star, or whatever. They're usually like people who excelled in some type of sport. If, you know, I will say this is probably like 30% of them, not all, like, I guess a smaller percentage, like 30% of them. And then they're used to winning, right? People are used to winning. And then they go on stage and then they lose. And it's like their first time getting like a real shock of losing. And it's based on their body, right? That's a pretty tough pill to swallow for someone who's never really lost before. So like, it's almost like you're telling them, like some girls take it as like you're telling them they're ugly and their body's fat, right? And I'm like, no, you just weren't the best that day. That's all. And then what happened is they put so much into it and so much into that judge's opinion where they are like, well, they just thought I was out of shape and they thought I was this and they thought I was whatever. I'm like, no, you just, it could have been your posing that day. It could have been your suit wasn't the right color. Like it, there could have been so many different things. It wasn't that. So you have to understand that this is super subjective, the sport that you're playing. So you have to go into it I'm just going to have fun mindset. I want to be competitive, but I'm going to have fun. Whatever happens, happens mindset. Because if you put too much into it, then you're going to set yourself up for some pretty big disappointment. Because this is just the reality of things. There's some areas that the judges aren't that good too. You know, that's just the way it is. Like some bikini is really hard. And when you get like a panel of like seven bodybuilders who don't really pay attention to bikini and they're judging bikini and it's so difficult to do, yeah, you're probably going to get some disappointed girls who maybe should have won, but they placed third. Or when there's a huge show and there's 50 girls and they're rushing through it, you might get someone who gets overlooked a little bit and maybe they didn't shine the way they should have, you know? So like, that's going to happen. That's just part of any sport. Every sport makes a mistake. Every umpire in baseball makes a bad decision. It's in every single sport. You hear referees making bad calls. Judges do too. So like, just understand that it's unlikely, but it does happen, you know, and it's never not going to happen. It's a human based opinion, you know? So I will say that just understand your expectations. Understand that if you lost once, it wasn't because of any other reason than maybe, you know, you just weren't the best person that day, but it wasn't like you're fat and you're not attractive or you're whatever, because people do take it that hard. And I think that one breaks my heart, because I'll have girls that are like really, really potential, like really good. And maybe it just wasn't their day that day. And then they don't compete anymore again. And I'm like, dude, you could have been.
That's like the opposite. I think of most people kind of blame it on everyone else though.
Oh,
that's
true.
If they do blame it on themselves, I mean, although it might be a little harsh, I mean, it may be like not true, at least they're not blaming it on the other circumstances, like, oh, it's political, or oh, that judge knows that girl, so we must be this. No. You know, and like going into it again, because I always say this, you're gonna have your friends, your family members say, they're gonna hype you up, right? They're gonna be like, you should have won. You were the best one out there.
Yeah.
You were the best by far, and you didn't win. This is messed up, it's rigged. And it's like, listen,
yeah,
your friends and family, you know, a little bit of a biased opinion there.
Yeah.
Okay. And it, you know, they're kind of fighting for you, or maybe they want to make you feel better, or maybe that's just genuinely how they think, but they're not really experts in the sport. And it takes that expert eye to see. That's why you should get like different opinion from maybe a judge or a coach or something like that.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, you'll have sometimes, this is one thing that is really, really frustrating for girls, is you'll have like coaches that'll like blame the bigger name coaches too. And they'll be like, oh, well, he trains with Adam, or she trains with Adam, or whatever. That's why she won, whatever. Right. And I'm like, that's never, ever a factor. Like, it's so funny because people think that like, they know the coach, the judges know who you judge.
They don't
with.
Have time to do that.
My ex-girlfriend was a bikini pro, and we dated for a long time, and she competed and she got, you know, she didn't win, and she didn't do really well at a show. And then, and I'm not going to say the name, but I know a judge, like this one judge who judges the show really, really well, like number in my phone talk once every, you know, month or so. Well, and he was like, oh, I didn't know that was your girlfriend. I was like, after the show, I was like, oh, he's like, yeah. I'm like, if there was any political pull, like she would have got a first call. He would have known. He knows my Instagram. She's in my picture. She's in my stories. Like, it doesn't matter. He doesn't even pay attention to that, right? It is not like a thing. Like,
yeah, you know, they don't got time to be like, oh, how many competitors are competing in the show this week? Oh, got to research every single one of them, see who coaches them, see what gym they go to, see if they're sponsored. No, they don't got time for that. They don't care. And also, they're doing things so quickly, writing down the score so quickly on that sheet. They don't even got time to like think. You know, it's like more like straight up physique, whatever. ever they're judging on. They don't got time to factor in everything else that you think they see on Instagram. They're really not following you, probably.
They do not care. And the thing is, the girls look significantly different on stage than they do like at check-ins too. So like them trying to put those two together when a girl shows up in a tracksuit, no makeup and her hair up to, you know, we've all seen that meme of like the Barbie who's like pre-prep and like stage day. Yeah. Like every girl shows up to the check-ins as the pre-prep Barbie and then the glammed out Barbie on stage day, right? So like they don't even know who's who when it comes to like who was on stage. Like, oh, that girl was at check-ins, I didn't even see her. Like it's just so funny that people even think that's a thing, you know. It's just such a cop-out for, you know, you just not being there at that point, or a coach just putting that wrong thing in your head, you know, to justify his preps continually not being successful. I don't know what else that is. So, but anyway, we're a little over. This is a long one, kind of fun.
Oh, yeah, but I think it's much needed though. So hopefully you guys got some good information from it.
Yeah.
We always like to be helpful, so.
For sure. So with that, we'll wish you a very good week, and let us know if you have any questions, and we'll talk to you guys next time.